Everybody, it's time for part two of It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's October 7, 2014. My next guest is the president of International Federation of Organic Agricultural Movements, IFOAM, the world umbrella body for the organic sector. IFOAM has approximately 800 member organizations in 120 countries around the world. He was the chair of the Organic Federation of Australia, the peak body for the Australian organic sector, and chair of the Far North Queensland Lychee Growers Association. He has extensive publications and outlets such as New Internationalist, the Journal of Organic Systems, Acta Horticulturae, the Journal, American Bamboo Society Journal, Heartwise, Holy Organic, The Organic Way, The Organic Standard, Ecology and Farming. He and his wife, Julia, own an organic tropical fruit orchard in Daintree, Queensland, that supplies quality control fruit to local and international markets. Andre, welcome to It's All About Food. Can you tell me how to pronounce your last name? I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to say it wrong.
Okay, it's Leu, L-E-U. It's the same E-U as Freud or Deutsch. It's the German way of pronouncing
okay.
it.
Okay, I was not going to say that, Andre Leu. Well, thank you
Don't worry.
For telling me.
I get called lots of things.
I imagine. Okay, you have a new book, and it's all about the myths that we're being fed, the myths of safe pesticides. We talk about this a little bit from time to time on this program, and I'm glad that you've written what you have. Very often I focus not on the safety of genetic engineering, as an example, and it's linked to needing all the pesticides and herbicides. I talk mostly about what's wrong with farming today on so many levels. Because it's hard to find all the science, but you've put it all together in one book that shows how bad it is.
Thank you for that. It's actually, for me, this has been a very important project because most people are told that pesticides are used safely and that there's very good science behind the testing, and we have nothing to worry about with the pesticides in our food. So I really wanted to investigate that because a lot of the, you know, anecdotal evidence we have shows it's the opposite. So I started to look at the science and the published peer-reviewed science and found that there are hundreds and hundreds of studies that our regulators, such as the US EPA, are ignoring, and instead they're basing their conclusions on what I call data-free assumptions. They're making their decisions on assumptions and not on published peer-reviewed science.
Well, you know, I went to college and I became a chemical engineer. And in my training, we were always taught to assume. Whenever we were trying to figure things out, the first thing we had to do was list all our assumptions. It's like in the training, assume this and assume that. But at some point, you really have to get, you can't just make things up.
Exactly, and this is one of the things I'm putting out in my book, is that good science is on evidence-based data, and good science is where they publish it. It's in peer-reviewed journals so that other scientists can look at that data and repeat it to see if the conclusions are correct. What is happening in this case is that there are assumptions being made about the toxicology of these products that are used in our food that have no basis in science. So instead of being science-based decisions, these are just data-free assumptions, which, you know, from our point of view, you know, is totally wrong, because regulators have a duty of care to protect the public from these toxic chemicals.
Now, when you're talking about pesticides, you're including the whole package, insecticides, herbicides, fungicides.
Exactly. It's all the sides.
all the sides.
Exactly. It's a generic word for the whole lot. So, and I explain that in my book so that people can understand when I'm using pesticides, I'm talking about all the different various compounds that are toxic compounds that are used in our food supply.
Now, one thing you mentioned in your book, which really started to give me chills, and I know that it happened, is that the little testing that we do is on singular chemicals, singular ingredients, and we live in a world where everything is mixed together and there's all different things happening, and we don't test the combinations of things that people will experience.
That's one of the key things that I point out, that the testing is based on one singular ingredient in a pesticide formulation, and they call this the active ingredient. But all the products that are sold and used are formulations of many different compounds. Many of them are quite toxic, and we have very good data of what we call synergistic or additive effects, that when you add these together, they are far more toxic. And the limited testing we do have is looking at, you know, 300 to 1,000 times more toxic than the single ingredient.
That's pretty scary.
The other part is not just the fact that every registered pesticide that is used in the world is not tested for their complete formulation in terms of long-term diseases such as cancer, nerve damage, what we call neurodevelopment, toxic neurodevelopment damage in children, things that lead to things like ADHD, other behavioral problems, endocrine disruption. I can go on naming all the different types of diseases that are caused by pesticides that are not tested for. When, you know, the actual product that is sold, there is no testing for these. The other one is the fact that several different types of pesticides are approved for one crop. So, for instance, it might be several insecticides, several types of herbicides, several types of fungicides, miticides, and they're all used. And when we look at the testing of food, most products will have multiple pesticide residues, and there's no testing of those combinations either.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's expensive, and it takes a long time to do those tests, and they want to get their products out and make money.
Exactly, and of course the other side of it is it's a win-win because of all these diseases, the same companies can sell all the cures for it as well. So
the quote cures.
Exactly, so it doesn't get better than that as a business model.
Now, one of your other myths is that pesticides are essential to farming, and we hear this a lot. We hear about the Green Revolution and how wonderful it was, and now it's left us with parched earth. Can't grow anything.
Yes.
I was speaking with Eric Lee Mader last week from the Xerces Society. Are you familiar with them?
No, I'm not.
Well, we talked a lot about farming and beneficial insects, and just listening to what they're working on in the book that just came out, it's just incredible. What a beautiful world we can have when we choose to work with native plants, wildflowers and grasses, and encourage those insects that will do the work with us rather than against us without using pesticides.
Exactly, and I actually go into that in the book. We call this eco-function intensification, where we work with functional biodiversity and bring that into the system, and that can give you the ecosystem services such as pest control. In other words, you know, we can bring in plants that are the hosts of the beneficial insects, put that into our system, and they will control the pests without having to use toxic chemicals. And this is really the future of agriculture, that we start working with agroecology, start using ecological science to make an agriculture that is much better for the environment. We increase the biodiversity. And what we know now, we can actually increase food production on top, and make it far greater than the amount of food that we're producing at the moment.
It's a win-win if we would only go that way. So how does it look so far? Is this message getting out there?
We have very good science at the moment showing that now that we're getting research into organic systems, that you can get much higher yields out of organic than conventional. And that includes studies in the United States where conventional is already high yielding. But the really exciting one is in the developing world where most of the hungry people live. There's about 800 million people who do not get enough food every day, and there's another billion. They get enough calories, but they don't get enough essential micronutrients, vitamins, antioxidants, minerals, etc.
That's most people in this country.
Yeah, I know. Look, it's the same. Actually, it's the same the world over now. They get more than enough empty calories,
yes,
but they don't actually get enough nutrition.
Right.
But what we know now is that around most of these people are actually smallholder farmers, and they're not producing enough food. And with good organic techniques, we're able to give them more than 100% increase in food production. And that takes these communities from abject poverty into relative prosperity.
Wow, I love that.
It's one of the really good success stories. There's a very good study done by two United Nations organizations, United Nations Environment Program and the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. And they reviewed 114 projects across Africa. And it was over 2 million hectares, that's 5 million acres, and just under 2 million farmers. And they found on average, with good organic methods, there was 114% increase in yields. And that meant that, exactly. And,
wow.
And it meant that these people now were food secure. Very importantly, they could send their children, and especially their daughters, to school. It's usually the daughters that don't get educated. They can afford medical bills. They could build nice houses. They could actually socialize. Now, some of the stories you hear, which you don't even think of, the women, because they can't afford decent clothing, don't want to socialize because they feel embarrassed or indecent.
Yes.
They can have nice clothing. They can socialize. You get this whole sense of community. The children start returning back to the villages because there's a future. It just changes everything around. And the thing about this is that, it just needs training and education. We don't need to waste, billions and billions of dollars developing a new GMO or something. That money can be used to help, the most marginalized people on our planet and turn it around and, build really vibrant, happy, functioning communities.
That's probably the most frustrating part for me of the genetic modified science, where they say that they're doing this to feed the world, and we know how false that is. And even if they did come up with some magic plants, it's all about distribution and educating people on what to do. And without that, they're not going to change at all.
Look, exactly. And the thing is, the type of business model that they're looking at, which is, agribusiness, which is big, broadacre, farm production, in the USA, in Brazil, in my country, Australia, it doesn't work because at the moment, the world is producing 2.5 times the amount of food we need. And that food is not getting to the people who need it for a very simple reason. If, for instance, you use an example of a farmer, say, in Malawi in Africa, who is food insecure, it doesn't matter how much, genetically modified soybeans we grow in Brazil, it won't get to them simply because he's got no money to pay for it. But a factory feedlot in China feeding cattle has got the money. And instead, what happens is those soybeans become very expensive meat for the middle and upper classes in developing countries. So it's a completely faulty model. What we have to do local food systems and improve production in the areas where, in the actual communities where we need to increase food production.
You know, another interesting thing about there are so many benefits of organic food production versus industrial food production. I don't like to use the word conventional, which we do here in the States. There's nothing conventional about pesticides.
Exactly.
Is that it takes a lot of fossil fuels to make those chemicals, and that puts carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the environment and warms us up.
Exactly. The sort of work that's being done now looking at agriculture, the latest figures are showing that agriculture is responsible for around 30% of greenhouse gases. And a lot of that is the energy used, you know, fossil fuel energy used to make fertilizers. Also, a lot of those fertilizers then volatilize, particularly the nitrogenous ones, become even greater greenhouse gases. But we also now have very good data showing that organic systems, because we can sequester CO2 and put it in, you know, put it into the soil as organic matter, as carbon, we can reverse climate change. We can actually strip it out and, you know, turn farming from one of the major problems to one of the major solutions for climate change.
Now, one of the saddest things about pesticides is how it impacts children's health. And that doesn't
to
get...
To me, that is...
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that is the saddest and most critical thing. And I put a lot of emphasis on that in the book. And it, to me, I suppose this is probably one of the greatest crimes that our civilization is doing, is that we are affecting our next generations. And we know now that this actually affects generations to come. Problems that people are experiencing at the moment can be due to their grandmother's exposure to pesticides.
Wow.
And, you know,
we're just at the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly. And what we're seeing particularly is the unborn, the fetus. They are very vulnerable to the smallest amounts of pesticides. And we know now it can be in parts per trillion. Mm-hmm. And just so that listeners can understand what a part per trillion is, if I have 3 Olympic-sized swimming pools full of water and I put 1 drop in that, that's a part per trillion. So,
yeah.
You know, what we're trying to get across here is that this idea, oh, look, it's so, you know, the levels are so small it won't hurt you, is a nonsense now with what we know with the science. And at particular times when the fetus is developing, they need those levels, small levels of hormones, parts per trillion, to develop the normal organs and tissues, say, you know, the reproductive system, the nervous and brain system, limbs, you know, body parts. And it's that sensitive. Now, if another chemical interferes with that, then it changes the way the fetus will develop. And we know that these are programming events too, so it can affect this, you know, individual for their whole life. And it is a major issue, because we also know the amount of chemicals now that are crossing the placental barrier. For instance, the Environmental Working Group did a study looking at the amount of chemicals in the placental cord blood of newborns, and they found up to 232 chemicals.
And it's not like these chemicals just disappear and go away once we've used them.
Exactly, and this is the other really critical thing too, because we get told, oh, the modern chemicals aren't like the bad ones like DDT. You know, they rapidly break down. What they're not saying is many of them actually break down to these metabolites that are even more toxic. For instance, organophosphates, they break down to these auxins. And they can be 100 to 300 times more toxic than the original product. So, yes, it's broken down, but, yes, it's far worse. And there's no testing for these metabolites.
That's right. Okay, Andre, we just have a few more minutes left, and I thought we would turn to some more positive things. And I want to know what kind of fruit you're growing in your orchard in Australia.
Okay. It is far more positive. I grow tropical fruit, so you mentioned lychees. I have a lot of different types of lychees. But the other ones I grow are fruits that mostly come from Southeast Asia, like rambutans. It's a lychee with sort of long hairs on it.
People I was just going to ask you if you grew those. I love those. I've had them in Costa Rica. I just saw them in the Whole Foods the other day, and they looked all dried up and horrible. But when you get them locally, they're lovely.
When they're fresh, they're beautiful. And the other one you would have seen in Costa Rica are the purple mangosteens, the queen of fruits. That's one of my favorites. I grow that. And the other one, which is also one of my favorites, but can be controversial for people who don't know it, is the durian, the big spiky fruit with a very strong odor.
Yes. I've never been fond of those.
For me and others, it's aficionado's fruit.
I know. People go nuts over
cheese.
Them.
You either love it or, you know, and adore it, or it's
or
the other
don't.
Way around.
Yes.
It is so strong. And then I grow a range of other fruits. But, I have about 30 acres under tropical fruit trees.
Beautiful. Well, what amazes me is when I taste fresh food, fruits and vegetables grown organically and with care, the flavors are so incredible. They taste so like nothing like you'll find in a store selling industrial conventional produce. And why do we want to miss that? Life is short. Every bite of everything should be just luscious.
I couldn't agree more with you. I think one of the sad things now is we've turn food into just a commodity when food is one of the most, you know, one of the main essential things in our life, and food is something that should be celebrated and enjoyed in every meal. And I agree, there's nothing better than fresh, good food, you know, with wonderful flavors and texture.
And color.
And color as well, I agree.
Okay, well, we just have a minute left, and I just wanted to say again, The Myths of Safe Pesticides. This is your new book, and I'm going to use it, I think, very frequently as a resource because there's so many great facts in here cited, all these different things that have been discovered about what pesticides are doing to us all over the world. So thanks for putting that all together.
My pleasure, and look, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed you when you were in New York, but I was not in New York when you were here. And
okay, no, I was in New York in a very good time because of all the climate convergence and the climate marches. So I did enjoy it. And the other thing I always enjoy is this time of year in the northeast of the states. It's just absolutely glorious. I had a great time.
Yeah, so let's try and keep it that way. We want to keep this world beautiful. All right? Thank you, Andre Loy.
Thank you so much, Karen. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Karen Hardglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food, The Myths of Safe Pesticide. This is a very important, groundbreaking book. If you want to get all the facts, it's all in this book. So send me an email at info@realmeals.org when you have a chance. If you have any comments and questions, and visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And remember, have a delicious week.